Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. You can find more tips, strategies, and downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. Today I've got a great interview with Leslie Shiner, where we're going to talk about job costing. Yeah, I know it sounds boring, but I don't think so. That's because it has a huge impact on our bottom line. So many contractors want to grow their sales. They want to be one of those big guys. It's always more sales. I'm not saying it's not important, because it is, but without profitable sales and knowing where you make your money, you're just busting your ass and ending up at the same place. So today we're going to take a step back and ask yourself, do you really know if you're making money on your jobs? Leslie's not only going to teach us how we can find out, but she's going to show us which type of jobs are the most profitable and how to pivot when a job is going bad and turn that loser into a winner. And we all want that. Leslie has an MBA in accounting and finance from the University of California in Berkeley. And that's a good school. I went there too, but probably a lot of years before she did. She has more than 30 years of experience working as a financial and management consultant to the construction industry, and she only works with contractors, so she knows her stuff. So now that we all have a ton of work on the books, let's find out how to make that work profitable with our interview with Leslie Shiner. Hey, Leslie, thanks for coming on to the show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
I heard you speak recently. You did a talk on better job costing and labor controls to increase profits. And you had a great turnout, so I know it's a problem for contractors. But there's so many contractors that don't do any job costing, that don't cost their jobs. So I want to jump into that. Get into job costing and why do I care? What does it mean to me? These are some of the things that I hear. My business is booming. I don't have time to look at a bunch of numbers. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be, and there's nothing I can do about it. My accountant's going to tell me at the end of the year if I'm making money or not, or in my gut, I know how long a job should take and if we're making money or not. Do you hear any of this yourself?
Well, certainly. Certainly, I hear a lot of that. And it depends, of course, on the size of your company. If you're the only person and you're sort of a one-man shop and you have all that information, then maybe running the business by the gut works for you. But when you start getting salespeople who have to come up with proposals and you get field people who have to be able to schedule and produce the work, that you end up with needing more communication and more ways to make sure that everybody's on the same page. The other concern quite often is jobs sometimes feel profitable, and then you look at the end of the year, and the comment that I hear all the time is, how come if all my jobs seem to be going so well, I never have any money in the bank? And the answer is maybe they're not going as well as you think they are, and maybe you're not necessarily focusing on the right things. So I find that as companies grow and even as they become more busy, it's funny you'd think it the other way around, but as you get busier and busier, you have a tendency to lose focus and the numbers that are in your head start to get all mixed up. And that's why it's so important to be able to look at a real-time report that says, first of all, how much have I spent? Second of all, how much did I think I was going to spend? And third of all, am I going to come on budget or over budget?
And this is what I see so often right now. You know, business is booming. You're trying to hire new guys. They're not trained as well. Your margins start going down. You have profit leakage. This is what's always surprising to me. Everybody wants to be the biggest guy in town. And they just want to keep growing and growing and growing, where you're doing more volume, but your margins have decreased and you're making less money. But at the same time, you've increased your risk. You got more trucks going down the highway, you know, that can get in an accident. You can have safety issues on the job. I agree with you. As business starts picking up, this becomes even more critical, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I often ask, you know, do you want to just work twice as hard to make just a little bit more money? Or how about working just as hard as you're working now, but making a lot more profit?
I'll choose so number
I know, two. I know both you and I went to Berkeley, and it's taken me a while to retrain my brain. Profit is a good term, and there's actually a saying that I stole from somebody that I don't remember who I stole it from, and I'd like to give them credit if I could remember, but it's revenue is for vanity, profit is for sanity, and then the third part of that is cash flow is for reality. So just when you're looking at the top number, your gross revenue, just growing that doesn't really help. I mean, it certainly makes you feel better. Oh, my company doubled in volume. And that's vanity. Revenue is for vanity. But
exactly.
If you want to be able to be sane, you have to look at profit as well, because that's what's going to give you the sanity. That's what's going to keep you excited and give you the rewards and the risks of owning your own business and improving your profitability.
Well, let's get into the basics of job costing, if we can, and what's in it for me.
Right. So the problem is, you know, I do get the question, so job costing, why bother? I don't have the energy or time. I don't know how to do it. And if you aren't really job costing, you're not going to be able to measure your margins. I've seen company books where they job cost all the materials but don't job cost the labor, and that doesn't really help. So what you have to do is sort of look at the end and say, what do I want to know? At the end of a job, what do I need to know? Do I need to know how many hours we spent compared to what we thought we'd spend? Do I need to know what the profit was? Or do I need to know, in essence, what my total expenses were compared to my original budget? One of the things that's important is, as you grow and continue to do more work, it'd be really nice to know, where do you have slippage? Do you have a tendency to underestimate the materials or to underestimate the amount of time? The one thing, and the reason why the presentation I gave was better job costing and then specifically focusing on labor, is labor carries the most risk. When people lose money on jobs and when jobs go bad, it's typically not that the materials got out of control. If the materials change, most contractors are really good at doing change orders. But it's when you've estimated a set number of hours and it took twice as many, that's where the profits go down the drain.
And what I find, we would get into a job, I had very good reporting, and I knew the progress of the job every day. We would know if that job started going over. And at that point, that's when you can do something about it. You can say, all right, we got to take a break, regroup. What are we doing wrong? How can we improve this? Because we're not going to hit our targets. I can see that. Maybe there's a problem that was unforeseen, and we need to go back to the owner and get a change order, get more time. But something's got to be done. Otherwise, at the end of the job, these guys are right, it's going to take as long as it's going to take. So if you don't have any control over the control of the job during the job, it's going to be what it is. And
So you need to know during the job when you can make your course corrections. But the other thing is, if you find out that you're routinely going over budget on particular aspects of the job, that's when you have a conversation with salespeople. That's when you have a revamp of the way you're selling the job, and perhaps you're not necessarily pricing it correctly. So it's bringing it back to a full circle that says, let's try and job cost and figure out where are we doing well and where are we not hitting the mark, and perhaps we need to revise the numbers. You know, a couple of years ago when everybody was just begging for work, you know, they didn't have the luxury. Now you have the luxury of saying, hey, why don't you just raise your price a little bit, do a little less work, but do only profitable work. And so if you can know what your price is good and how to create a good price and not just try and go out and buy jobs, which is what we were doing through 2010, 11, 12, those horrible years, what I call the Great Recession because it was so great, and that's where it becomes important. Maybe it's better to do less work more profitably than just go about spending and spinning your wheels and doing more work just to increase your revenue.
I agree. Well, let's get into, we talked about labor being the biggest issue and the biggest variable that we have. Let's talk about the true labor cost. I think that's an area where where I've seen that we just don't have the costs associated with labor, where it's underestimated and contractors do not realize they pay a man $20 an hour. It's getting a lot more than 20. It's costing you a lot more than $20 an
hour. Right.
Can you talk a little about that?
So, yeah, there are a couple of things that are really important to look at. And certainly gross wage is just the basis, just the starting point. I always say that you should think about your employees like Pigpen. Remember who Pigpen was from the Charlie Brown cartoon?
Sure.
And what did Pigpen have wherever he went?
He had all the dust, right?
He had that cloud of dust. So now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying your employees are dirty and carry around dust. But wherever you take an employee, they go with a cloud of dust that has all these other costs associated with that employee. Now, a lot of contractors know you've got payroll taxes, and they'll take that into account, or workers' comp and that sort of thing. But you also have, do your employees have a truck, or do you give them a truck, or do you reimburse them for mileage? Do you provide any sort of health insurance for roofing? In many cases, there are union issues and the union costs. In fact, I just did an analysis with someone who was paying their employees union rates, and when we put all the union burdens, just union burdens and payroll taxes on top of that, it was double.
Right.
So whatever the union base rate was, and this was about $40 an hour, just not even counting overhead, not even counting trucks or any of that, if you take that and you add all of those payroll taxes and all of those additional costs, it cost the employer $80 to pay an employee $40. So it's really important to look at all those different costs associated with your employee. Things like, as I said, vehicles and cell phones or anything that if you ask yourself a question, you say, if I hire another employee, what other costs am I going to incur?
Well, I can see how this would apply, let's say workers' comp or something that's tied to the dollar amount. That's easy to add on there. But when you talk about trucks and you talk about health insurance, for instance, well, that's a monthly charge. How do I apply that to my $20 an hour man?
Right. And that's an excellent question. So if you're looking at your burden labor, and actually I have a free labor burden calculator that's available on my website. I can mention that now. www.shinergroup.com. And what we do is we take the cost and we say, okay, well, certain costs like workers' comp, payroll taxes, those are all a percentage of the wage. Those are easy to do. And then we have other costs that are flat, that are fixed costs, things like health insurance, things like cell phones and trucks and small tools. I always like to bring up small tools. You know, the question for your fifth grade math student is, if you have six employees and they lose $3,000 worth of tools, what would 10 employees lose? So if you're adding together all of those items, the one thing you want to do is look at the total package. I take an employee and I add up for the year how much it costs. Now, with that, besides coming up with a burden rate, I'm actually going to come up with two rates. One is my total cost per hour. I'm going to take this calculator, add the gross wage, all those things that are percentages, all those things that are flat, and I'm going to divide that by the number of hours that they worked. And I have an example of a $25 an hour guy that costs about $50 an hour for every hour that they work. So that's about double. But then the thing that's important to remember is that's just for every hour that you pay them. It's not for every hour that they work on a job, because the second thing that's so important to track is called either labor efficiency or employee efficiency, and that is how many billable hours are your employees producing. So do you have drive time, and do you include that in your estimate, and do you job cost that, or is that just extra overhead? Mm-hmm. Do you have production meetings? Do you have shop time? Do you give paid vacation or paid holiday or paid sick leave? You know, I'm from California, and there are rules and new regulations all the time about paid sick leave, and you have to provide one hour of sick leave for every 30 hours that someone works. So back in the olden days, contractors would just pay people and not have to pay for any extra time, and that's not the case so much anymore. So one of the things you need to do is take a look at the total number of hours paid, and come up with an hourly cost per hour paid, but then take a look at the total number of hours that are actually billable to a job, and that comes up with a burden labor rate per utilized hour.
Well, let's take a look at that, because make sure I understand that. So the first step in all of this is we have to come up with the number of hours worked per man. Is that right?
Yeah, hours paid per man.
Hours paid per man. That's something that a lot of contractors have no idea.
Well, right. But, you know, it's interesting. Most people use this number 2,080. There are 2,080 hours available in a year. That's 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks. That adds up to 2,080. But many contractors do not end up paying full time. And there's also overtime involved.
Well, I think there's also like in the roofing business, you know, when it rains, guys don't get paid.
Right.
I think what you're saying is we have to come up with at least rough number on average what an average guy is going to be paid, the number of hours that he's actually going to be paid, which is a lot less than we have in a full year.
Yeah, in fact, from my experience, the average number of hours is about 1,600 to 1,800 hours for guys that, in essence, feel like they're working mostly full-time. Mm-hmm. The total number of hours they get paid is about 1,600 to 1,800. Now, it's, again, slightly different depending upon what geographical area you're in. I talk to roofers now who everyone is working 60 hours a week because I always say the best thing about our drought was that nothing leaked. And the worst thing about ending the drought is everything leaked, and it's almost impossible to find a roofer that will come out and work with you. They are just swamped.
We had a lot of pent-up demand, all right.
A lot of pent-up demand. So, one, you know, it should be fairly easy, since people are, especially people are paid by the hour, to add up the total number of hours last year you paid them, or at least do this for the first 6 months of this year. What is the total gross wage, and what are the total number of hours that they worked?
There's a lot of these hours may be unproductive, which could be safety meetings, warranty work, basically hours that you're not able to charge the customer.
Correct. And so that's what's important about job costing, because if you're job costing the labor, you know which hours get coded specifically to jobs, and you know which hours don't. Those that are shop time or meeting time or driving time, those sorts of hours. So if you just take a look at the total number of billable hours and you divide that by the total number of hours that you paid someone, you can come up with something called the labor utilization rate. And it's an interesting rate because a lot of people think, oh, it's pretty high. But if you take the number of hours you paid somebody and first subtract if you had paid vacation, any PTO, paid time off for vacation, holiday, or sick, any of that, and then subtract out the time that was used in production meetings and all of the other examples, quite often I find that contractors end up with a goal of about 70 or 75% utilization, and many are running around at 60, 55 or 65% utilization. So that means for every hour, for every 10 hours that you pay somebody, they're only on the job about 6 or 7 of those hours.
Okay, and I think what I'm hearing is now when we're going to bid our jobs, that $20 an hour man is a lot more than that $20 an hour, even with the burden, because he's not working as much, and we've got to factor that in because we've got to recover those dollars.
Correct. So if you take, you know, for example, a guy that's $25 an hour and you come up with a burden rate, and typically the burden rate is double. Mm-hmm. If you add all of the additional costs on top of that.
And those costs, real quickly, those costs are generally what?
So those costs are all the payroll taxes, workers' comp, liability insurance, vehicle costs, health insurance, if you've got that, cell phones, small tools, and all those additional costs that are floating around in that cloud of dust wherever they go.
Some of us have that below the line down in overhead. I think what you're saying is we want to get all of those up to above the line, charged out to the man that's going out there.
So I think accountants like to. I'm not a CPA. I have an MBA in accounting and finance. But I think accountants sometimes want to make things sound confusing. But we had talked at the beginning about job costs and above the line, below the line. So what happens on a financial statement is you look at your revenue, and from that you subtract two types of costs. One is called cost of goods sold, COGS, or for some of you it's called cost of goods stole, but it's the cost of goods sold. And those are your direct job costs. That's your materials, your direct labor, the payroll taxes for that direct labor, and all of those costs that you can directly attribute to a job. But there's another section of job costs that accountants refer to as indirect direct. Well, that sounds like a silly name, but basically it means that it is still a job cost. It's directly attributable to a job, but we can't dollar for dollar do it. It's somewhat indirectly attributable to a job. So a good example of that is fuel. I don't know if you know any bookkeeper who's going to take a look and have any field guy put down all of his miles, then the bookkeeper figure out, well, you know, 46 cents of this gas goes to this job on this day. Instead, you just create a bucket or a pool of those costs. So all the vehicle costs that are associated with an employee, all of these indirect direct costs, things like small tools, and as I mentioned, vehicle costs, non-productive time, all of those costs go into another section called indirect direct. And once you take your revenue for a job, you subtract out the direct job costs, you allocate some of the indirect job costs, then you can really see what your gross profit on that job is. And hopefully that gross profit adds up in all of the jobs to be enough to cover the overhead and still provide profit.
But what you're doing is by moving all those costs up there, my gross profit number is going to come down. So you're cutting into my profit. How does
Correct.
That work?
I hear that all the time. You know, I had someone, and I was a part of a trade association. We did a benchmarking study, and I had someone submit their numbers, and they had an 80% gross margin. Woohoo! I mean, that would be great. Except they also had like 95% overhead.
Right.
So, yes, I'm going to move those costs, make your jobs more expensive, so that, A, you have a better understanding of how much each job costs, but the other half of that, because accounting is this double-entry accounting system, the overhead is less.
Right.
So if I took a bunch of costs that you were hiding down there in overhead, and I moved them above the line and now allocated them to the job, yes, the gross profit on the job goes down, but the overhead goes down, and the net profit won't change.
So why are we doing this?
That's a good question, and I get that question a lot. So there's several different reasons that we're doing this. I mentioned already that you want to make sure that your production team and your sales team, if it's the same person or different people or different divisions, are all on the same page. I want to know how much something costs, and I want to know how much we're going to sell it for. Now, if we make your labor more expensive, someone will turn to me. In fact, estimators often turn to me and say, I can never sell a job if you're going to make my labor that expensive.
Right.
But the other half of that is, if I make the labor that much more expensive, then the markup that you charge is that much less. So the net number or the total sale number can still be the same. It's just understanding where those costs are coming from and not fooling yourself into thinking that costs are cheaper or jobs are cheaper than they are.
This is going to give us a truer cost of our labor and what our labor actually does cost us, so we can provide more accurate estimates. Is that right?
Correct, because when we talk about job costing, the most important thing is to do an apples-to-apples comparison. So one of the mistakes I see that people make is they create a budget at their billable rate. We charge $110 an hour for all field employees. And then they job cost it at the gross wage. Oh, and I'm going to job cost it at $25 an hour. And then they run a report, and look, we came in under budget. And actually, you can spend 3-4 times as many hours and still think you're under budget. So when you come up with a budget, it's important to have that number be very similar to the way in which you job cost. So I can compare my estimated cost with a burdened rate of X and then job cost it at that same burdened rate. Because when you are comparing your cost to a budget, there's two kinds of variances when it comes to labor. One is a dollar variance. It cost me more per hour than I thought, or less. And the other is an hours variance. It took me longer than I thought. And I think it's really important to know when a job goes off, which one of those, what was the variance and the cause of that variance, so the next time you estimate a similar job, you either adjust your labor cost per hour or you adjust the number of hours that are expected to do this project.
Now, it sounds like you're talking about what we call a postmortem, where we're going to review our estimate versus actual, and then we can see if the labor was off, maybe materials. Now, for instance, I had four sales guys, and I had this one guy, I don't know, he just couldn't seem to measure the roof, but all of his jobs seemed to be, his materials were going over. We had to make that adjustment and beat him over the head, basically, to go out and get his, you know, get the right material costs. Without having the actual, the estimate versus actual, and doing that postmortem, looking at the job afterwards and seeing, hey, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? What can we improve on? We're getting nowhere.
That, absolutely. And the other thing that's important with that is to know how much money are you making on materials and how much money are you making on labor? Because everything gets marked up to a certain degree. And you have to know there are certain jobs where the materials are much more expensive. Does that mean you'll make more money or you'll make less money? Do you make more money on jobs that are labor heavy or material and equipment heavy? So if you have a job and you have to have a lot of scaffolding as opposed to a job that has no scaffolding, which, you know, taking a look and saying, well, which one of these is more profitable? And if you discover that the job that was much taller, you had to have a lot of scaffolding so that you get up there a lot more safety precautions, those sorts of things, and you lost money on that, then you have to know when you're doing your estimate to look at the different types of jobs that you do. The types of materials can have different markups. The types of roof that can have different markups. There's all sorts of different types of jobs so that you can say, well, this is the kind of work that I want to do, or this is the kind of work we seem to lose money on. We need to either raise our price or just not focus on that type of work.
Now, the way that we did it, we had a cost per man per day. We had the type of work that we did generally involved a 7-man crew. We'd have 6 or 7 crews, and so we had to, one, you've obviously got your foreman and, you know, most of the truck expenses, cell phones and so forth were associated with him. So his cost was very high. Then we've got a balance of various, you know, laborers perhaps and middle people. The important thing that we had to look at each of those, not only each per man, we had a per man cost for a certain employee, but putting those people together as a crew, as a team, when we're estimating, we had to have that balanced out pretty well as for each team, each crew, because if you're estimating we've got so many, you know, man days for this job, that had to balance out with crew per crew. Otherwise, we were going to lose money, maybe not on the hours, but on the dollar amount.
Right. That goes back to the hours variance versus the dollars variance. And being able to analyze that. So, yes, I think that's important. And I think it's also important when you're looking at the crew days is to look at the productivity of each crew and to be able to measure that to a fairly detailed extent. You know, one of the ways to improve profitability is to pay the same amount and get more work done. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to overwork our employees, but if we start paying attention to that non-productive time, if we start paying attention to how we're treating that downtime, how many times do you have a whole crew out on a job site and they run out of materials? And what do they do? And are they just standing around, and are you paying them to stand around? Are you paying them to go run and pick up some extras that they missed? So if you can focus on improving labor utilization, that's the percentage of time that you pay an employee that's billable to a job versus not billable, it won't cost you any more typically, but it will allow you to bill more and do more revenue and produce more work with the same amount of people. Mm-hmm. So one of the examples that I like to use is that if you ever, did you ever have experiences with your guys out on a job site and all of a sudden they run out of material?
Never.
Never. Oh, well, good for you.
Yeah, right.
So,
okay, who measured this roof?
Yes, occasionally that might have happened. Let's just pretend for some people that it has. So one of the things that you can do is instead of, and of course when you send somebody to go pick up more material, typically it's the most important, the most expensive person that does it. Mm-hmm. And they also often will do it in pairs or stop at Starbucks or get some donuts.
Right.
So one of the things you can do is, and we used to do this with taxi companies, is have a agreement with a taxi company to actually deliver the materials. If you're not a large enough company to have an employee that's called an expediter who just runs around and delivers materials, you can also use Uber. You can call the supply yard and have them set up a package. You can buy it online, and then Uber will go and pick it up and just charge you the fee of picking it up so everybody on the job can still stay productive.
Gotta love Uber, huh?
So there are different, I'll say Uber or Lyft, because
yeah.
Uber's not so popular now. So,
yeah, true.
But there's a lot of different strategies around trying to help employees become as productive as possible. They don't like standing around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they just, maybe a couple do, but most employees don't like when they're not able to produce work. So if you have, like you said, perfect measurements, better set of plans, better scope of work, so that they're not out there on the job site trying to figure stuff out all the time, all of those can lead to not having to spend a lot more money, but making your employees more productive and thereby doing a lot more revenue with the same amount of resources that you have.
And if you're not job costing, you're not going to know that. Like, for instance, we had a particular foreman on his jobs. They seem to run out of little things a lot more. If you're not job costing, you're not going to be able to address that. We were able to go say, hey, look, you got to do a better job when you're doing the pre-job and, you know, make sure we've got everything that we're going to need.
Right. Absolutely. And that's why the job costing, can you can start to see trends. And you can start to see trends on which people produce more profitable work, which types of jobs are more profitable. It's very important, especially now since there's so much work out there, that you can focus on the kind of work that you do well. Some people do very large projects and make more money on the large projects and lose money on the little ones. Others have a very effective, let's say, handyman type division or you know, the roofing tune-up division or the repair division. And being able to track and see, you know, the cost for sending an employee out to do repairs is very different than the cost for sending a crew out for a week to do a full re-roof. So being able to get good job costing can help you know that so that you can focus on the kind of work that produces the biggest bang for the buck and not waste your time on stuff you don't do well or find ways to do better those things and figure out what do you need to focus on, what do you want to focus on so that you can improve the profitability on the jobs you do now.
And that comes back to our original discussion about now we're doing more volume, contractors are booming, I want to get bigger and bigger, do more jobs or taking on more work, but the margins continue to go down. And if you're not tracking this and seeing where you're making your money, who's making your money, you're doing all this extra work, and you're ending up in the same spot with more risk, more headaches, on and on.
Right. Well, and, you know, quite often you see some jobs come in really well, and others are really poor. Or some years you make a lot of money, and other years you don't. I mean, does it mean that you forgot to figure out how to do the work 1 year, and you became an expert the next year? It's really a matter of managing the work that you're doing and managing it with using numbers to determine how to come in on budget and come in on time and on budget. You know, I always say there's really three ways to make more money or to improve profitability. You know, one of them is to spend less. So if you can spend less per job and still do the same work, then you'll certainly improve your profitability. The other is to charge more. And I'm continuing to remind people that if you're, you know, there's a good old law, supply and demand. If you're busy, test out higher rates. Wouldn't it be nice to do the same amount of work you do now or just a little bit less work and make more money than to run around, as many of us are, like a chicken with our heads cut off because there's just so much to do? So you can either spend less or you can charge more. And then the third is that you can do more work. And I always want to put a caveat on that, do more work, because like you said in the very beginning, there's a lot of contractors out there who their volume is going up and up and up, but the profits aren't going up with that. Because as you get busier and busier, you have a tendency to be less focused, you get scattered, you run from job to job. Warranty costs go up dramatically. When companies are really busy, their warranty costs can just go, just go through the roof because they're not able to really finish up a job and close it out as they should.
This is not a business that we're going to make it up in volume.
Right.
Not the airline business where you put another person in that seat for only an additional $5. It doesn't work that way. This is the whole thing about everybody wants to be bigger and they want to be the biggest guy. And I think it just comes down to ego so much, where the only ego I think about is how much profit we're making on the job. How can I make more profit with less employees, less risk, and less headaches?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One thing I want to get into before we wrap up, which I think is very important, is we talked about this budget versus actual. Without having one is a good estimate, which is going to be our budget, and then what's actually happening, we have nothing to compare with. Is that right?
Yes. And so one of the things that happens is salespeople have a tendency to price jobs on a unitary basis. It's by square foot, correct?
Can be.
And so one of the things you want to do is be able to produce a budget that lends itself to a proposal that you can give the customer, or if you're a sub and working for the general, and also be able to produce a budget that feeds into your job cost system. Mm-hmm. So that if you're going to be job costing your materials, you're going to be able to job cost it at the same way. And same particularly thing with labor is you want to be able to create a budget for labor at what your typical burden labor cost is and then job cost it exactly that way. So again, you're comparing apples to apples so that the salespeople can hand off that budget to production and they can run with it, start working on the job and being able to keep track of those costs against that budget.
That's an area where I think a lot of money is lost, is in that handoff. The way we did it, which worked pretty damn well, was a salesman would put the package together, meet out at the job, do a pre-job with production. We've got the sales always very optimistic, right? Overly optimistic, where, oh, yeah, they should be able to do this in this amount of time. Well, production says, there's no way. You know, they're more, hey, we don't want to have to bust our ass so much. So there's that difference. Now, our superintendent would go out as the referee, have to negotiate this, basically, and say, what is this really going to take? Because you can't give your production an unrealistic budget and say, expect them to go, okay, well, this is how it's going to go. And we all know it's not going to happen. That was always a big issue for us. The way that I had it, basically they had to work it out. If they couldn't work it out, they had to come talk to me and they didn't want to have to do that. 95% of the jobs got worked out and they come up and everybody signs off. Here's the target that we're going to hit. And that's what we're going to track. If the salesman was too optimistic and it's not going to happen, that would have to be an adjustment on his commission. That was a huge thing for us. At the same time, we finished the job and we did our postmortem and we could see what happened, you know, what went well, what went bad. And that's how we could improve our production, make more profit.
Right, and that handoff is really important, and the buy-in, getting your production to buy in and saying, okay, I agree, I am going to be able to do the job, it's going to cost me this much, and I'm going to be able to do it within budget. And, I always joke that companies, bookkeepers really like it when the company's big enough to have a sales team separate from a production team, because then when a job goes bad, they stop blaming the bookkeeper and they start blaming each other.
Right.
So Yes, that is important, is to be able to work as a team and to be able to have that handoff. And that goes back to making sure that you're producing really good scope of work documents, that the material takeoff is an excellent, has good measurements, good material specifications, and that when the salespeople and the production manager or site superintendent or foreman, whoever is working on the job, meet, that they come and form an agreement that says, yes, we can do the job for this amount of money, mm-hmm. for in this many hours.
What type of reports do we need? And the KPIs that we want to keep a close watch on.
Right.
What do you see in that area?
So I'll mention, you know, some people can get very involved in the numbers, and a lot of people don't like working with numbers. There happen to be two KPIs that I like, mostly because even if you don't understand numbers, or even if your books aren't very good, you'll get these numbers. And the one is labor utilization, as I mentioned. That one's a little bit harder, but if you do get time cards from your employees, whether it's paper or it's electronic, you can measure employee utilization by looking at how many hours they allocate to jobs and how many hours they got paid altogether. So that's one of the KPIs I like to use as a measurement, and also because employees can be involved in that process. They can see those numbers. They don't have to look at what everybody makes. You don't have to share salaries with people, but you can share how many hours people get paid versus how many hours they worked on jobs. And the second KPI that I happen to like a lot is revenue per employee. And in particular, because no matter how good or bad your books are, hopefully your tax return tells you how much you sold. That's your revenue. And hopefully you can go out and count how many employees you have. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have perfectly aligned books in order to get that. But it's something that you can track, in particular because it's a forward-looking KPI or key performance indicator. Because if I can look at when I was profitable and determine that each employee can produce, let's say, about $175,000 of the work, then as I'm forecasting what I have in my backlog, I can say, this is how many employees I think I need.
What I had a set of reports. I called them my Maui reports because I like to be able to sit on the beach in Maui and make sure I knew what was going on with my business. We had some good job costing reports, and I think it's important to just keep things as simple as possible. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see where we were, percentage of completion on a particular job, make sure we were at the point that we were supposed to be, and basically some other numbers. But what I think is important is to keep it simple and get the information that really makes a difference that you're going to look at, because there's no point in having all these long reports that nobody's going to look at, and that happens a lot. But you've got to get the right information to the right people, whether it's to your estimators, your production, your superintendent. Get those reports and get them timely, and make sure that they're getting good information in, so you're getting good information out. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And just because somebody can produce a 26-page report doesn't mean that you're getting what you need.
Right.
And so you are correct. You want to keep it simple. You've got to figure out what do you need to know. And basically you start at what we call the forest level, and then we get to the tree level. Mm-hmm. Too many people delve into the numbers and never really take a step back. So
exactly.
You want to create reports that look at a summary level, and then maybe you don't even need to get into the detail. It tells you what you need to know. So create a process where you can get the kind of reports that you need that are real-time and timely, and then be able to manage from those reports.
In wrapping up, here I am. I'm a contractor that's, you know, either I'm really not doing the job costing that I should be, or maybe I need some work on my job costing. How would I go about that, and what can you do for me?
Well, there's several different ways to go about improving those job costing processes in your company. First of all, it's important to note that it's all a team effort. You know, we're talking about getting the salespeople and the production people creating a team. The other thing is that bookkeeping, back in the olden days, was just for bookkeeping and tax returns. But now bookkeeping is really for job costing. So creating a system whereby the information that goes into your bookkeeping system is not just used to pay your taxes at the end of the year, but where it's used to create the kind of job cost information that you need to manage the company. So there's a lot of different sources out there. Our firm actually does consulting. We do a lot of different consulting with companies that either use QuickBooks or even other products as well.
Tell me a little more about that, about what your company does.
So we have a lot of different sources or different types of work that we do in consulting with contractors. We specialize only in contractors. I actually started my business specializing in nonprofits and construction, which was unfortunately very similar.
Well, that's the same thing, isn't it?
Same thing, yeah. So I got rid of the nonprofits, and I only work with contractors. So my goal is to make contractors more profitable, is help them understand the process, help them understand the changes that they need to do, and help them create a process where they can track and then improve profitability. So one of the things we do is we offer a QuickBooks file assessment. If you do have QuickBooks, you send us a copy of your data, and we produce a 25 to 30 page report that says, here's best practices for specifically for the industry, and here's the way your books are set up from the accounting side as well as the project management and the estimating side. So that's one of the things that we do. And then we also do a lot of consulting, and luckily because of remote access now in the internet, a lot of the consulting we do is remotely. And then finally, the third product we sell is something called the remote CFO, or I'm sorry, the fractional CFO. And, you know, a lot of small companies have a bookkeeper, and then they have somebody that does their tax return, but they don't really have a full-time CFO because they're too small and they can't afford to have a full-time position, and there isn't actually a need for that. So what we do is we meet with companies once a month, review the financials, focus on things like gross margin, markup and margin, break-even, labor utilization, and other KPIs that they need to be looking at, and really just perform the CFO function of a company, but on a much smaller scale, and that's why we call that the fractional CFO program.
That sounds like a great service. And how can they get in touch with you?
You can certainly check out, send me an email or check out my website. The website is www.shinergroup.com. It's all one word. It's S-H-I-N-E-R, shinergroup.com. Or you can email me at leslie@shinergroup.com as well.
And you'd mentioned something about a download that they could get off your website, which I have.
Yeah, there's actually
and it's
a
fantastic.
Couple of things on the website. One is you can get that labor burden calculator I talked about. I also have an accounting flash report. As you said, you don't want to have tons and tons of pages and pages of information. I have this Excel report that you can basically distill down into two pages everything you need to know about your financials if you can get that off of your books. And then the third I do have is a PDF of a presentation called Using QuickBooks for Job Costing. So those are three of the free tools that are available on my website.
And I've got to give you a quick pitch for this book that you wrote a while back, because I've used this. It's fantastic. It's simple. It's called A Simple Guide to Turning a Profit as a Contractor. This is a great book that everybody should get because it's easy to read. It's got some great information, and it really lays out how to make money as a contractor. How do they get that book?
Well, thanks for bringing up the book. I want to mention that Melanie, who's my co-author on the book, we wrote this book not as a how-to textbook. It's actually a business fable about a poor contractor who gets his tax return and owes a bunch of money to the IRS, doesn't have anything in the bank, and he asks the age-old question, how can I owe money to the IRS when I have no money in my checking account? So it's a business fable. He hires this fabulous consultant named Hope, and she shows him how to improve the books, how to understand all those things I mentioned, markup and margin, burden labor costs, all those things. And so it's kind of like, hopefully it's an easy read, I've been told. We wrote it that way, and I've been told that it's an easy read. It's not a textbook with a bunch of jargon. So I get a lot of great feedback, and again, it's not the kind, we didn't want to write a book that the owner would buy, hand off to his bookkeeper, and say, here, this is for you. It's for the owner of the company. It's for actually everyone in the company. And certainly, if you go to my website, there's a link right there to go ahead and purchase the book, and you can do it straight from my website, and that'll take you right through to Amazon to purchase it.
That's great, because I'm looking at mine right now, and I've got yellow highlights all the way through this. It was a great, easy read, but has some great information.
Good. I'm always glad to hear that. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for coming onto the show. I'm sorry I kept you a little long, but there was just so much great information. I had to get this out to our audience. I really appreciate it, and we'll be in touch, Leslie.
Well, great. Well, thank you for having me. It was a whole lot of fun, and I appreciate you bringing me on your show.
Great. Take care. Thank you. That's it for today's show. If you want to get a copy of my new guide, 7 Steps to Getting More Qualified Leads for Your Roofing Business, go to my website at theroofershow.com, where you can grab it for free or click on the link in the show notes below. And as always, thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. We'll see you next time on The Roofer Show.